Okay, so we are in Shulchan Aruch Shir. We are up to Simon Reish Samach Dalet Sif. I guess Sif Beis and Sif Gimel. Sif Beis is not much to say. Sif Gimel has like volumes and volumes to say. And I can't say I'm fully prepared. I think we'll lay the groundwork, and hopefully over the next week I'll be able to get a little bit more of the information that's in Sif Gimel. Sif Beis and Gimel are really where we actually talk about the mitzvah of Mila. Like, this is, we've talked a lot about when it's supposed to be and what happens when you do it in the wrong time. Now we actually say, okay, what is this mitzvah of Mila? So the, so I guess the best is probably to look in the Torah. There's not actually very much in the Beis Yosef on it, but let's look in the Torah. The Torah lays it out. And then we'll do a little bit of introduction, then go through it again in the Shulchan Aruch, and then at least talk about what some of the issues are that are out there. So a Sif Beis is just what the knife is supposed to look like. It says, "Uvachol malin afilu b'tzur uvischuchis uvachol davar hakoreis chutz mikromos shalkana." That with you're allowed to do a bris with anything. Even you don't doesn't need to be a metal knife. It could be a piece of flint or a piece of glass or anything that will cut, with the exception of this krumis shalkana, which is the like the stem of a reed. Why? It sounds like there's some kind of thorns or something that could come off of it and can actually do damage to the area, sever something, which we don't want to have done, and therefore it can't be used. It's actually a separate Gemara. The Gemara someplace else, the Beis Yosef quotes it, a Gemara in Chulin, says there's five things that you're not allowed to do with a krumis shalkana. One of them is shechita, that's why it's in Maseches Chulin. And then another thing that's mentioned is you're not allowed to do a bris mila with it either. Okay, fine. So u'mitzvah min amuvkar, the best thing to do is lamol bebarzel, to use a iron knife. U'bein besachin bein bemisparayim v'nogu kol Yisrael lamol besachin. You could use scissors. A knife or scissors. And the minhag Yisrael is to use a sachin. The minhag Yisrael is to use a knife, which is what we're all used to. The Psakim Uchuvos here. The Psakim Uchuvos talks about using a double-sided knife for some reason, to use a knife that where both sides could be used, in case the maul makes a mistake and cuts with the wrong side. So that way we'll avoid that issue, and we'll be able to do it straight up. So that is the. There's really not much to say about that. Really, anything could be used. Our minhag is to use a knife. The interesting thing, used to use scissors, that actually gets into Sif Gimel, where it actually talks about the Mila itself. How could, like, we, it's hard for us to even conceive the use of scissors. How could that be? So let's see what he says in Gimel, then I'll give the introduction, and then we'll do it in Shulchan Aruch. So in Sif Gimel, the Torah says, Ketzad Malin, so how do you actually go ahead and do the Mila? So Chodchen es ha'orla, so you cut off the orla. The orla is what we call the foreskin. Kola ora chofa es ha'atara, that's the entire skin that is covering the crown. Achenisgale kola atara, until the entire atara, until it's totally revealed. V'achar kach, afterwards, now what is there left? It says, V'achar kach porin es ha'krum harach shalamata. You will then peel back the membrane that is sitting underneath, me'or b'tziporin, with your nails. Umachziro lekanu lekani. You'll push it back to the other sides. Ad sheyira basar atara, until you can see the flesh of the atara, the flesh of the crown. Ba'achar kach motzitzin hamila. Then afterwards you do metzitza. You will suck that area, the wound. Ad sheyetze hadam mehamakomus, until blood comes out. Harachokim kadei shelo yavu lidei sakana. So it will not lead to any types of danger. If the mo'el decides that he's not going to do this metzitza, that he's not going to do this sucking, so then we would remove him. That's, the Gemara says that explicitly. There it is. The Beis Yosef comments that on top of the page, four words, Meimra de Rav Papa Sham. That's what Rav Papa says over there. Rav Papa just says straight up, you remove him because he's not being safe. He's a surgeon that's not being safe. It's actually even unclear from that Gemara, I looked it up, whether it's even talking about Mila. It could be talking about any type of surgery, meaning that was the standard practice after surgery was done, is that you would suck the blood out of the area. I'm not sure about that, but that at least was my impression. Certainly by Mila, if somebody refuses to do it, So then you would remove him because the simplest pshat of the Gemara is because he's not being safe. Then after the bris takes, after it happens, so then you put on some kind of ribbon and some kind of bandage, something like that, and you should put some kind of medication inside the bandage. And then the bris is over. Okay? So now he said there'd be a little bit of a introduction, a biological introduction. What's going on? And this is done differently. Let's see, I got a little text here. I see from Bob, send me a text. I do hear you okay, however, I'm leaving the middle of the technical. Okay, no problem, Bob. So what is the introduction? And this is done differently, and we do things differently today. So what is this? So apparently there's sort of two layers of skin that cover the crown, the corona, right? That's what it's called in English, right? So there's two levels of skin. There's a thick level of skin, which is what we refer to as the foreskin. And then there's a thinner membrane that covers it that's somewhat more attached to the corona itself. Now we are responsible for getting rid of it entirely. And in time of the Gemara, and it seems like time of the Shulchan Aruch doesn't change anything. So up till the last couple hundred years, it was done in this way. You would cut off the foreskin that would leave this this membrane on top of it afterwards, and then that would be peeled back. A little bit of a question whether Avram did Priya or whether that was something that came later on as Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai. But regardless, we're responsible. In fact, we could just quickly do Sif Dalet also. Sif Dalet in the Torah is six words. Mal v'lo para. If you just do the Mila and you don't do the Priya, you don't peel back that membrane. Ki'ilu lo mal. It's as if you have not done as if you did not actually go ahead and do the bris milah. So that is certainly a very necessary part of the milah. So that's the way it was done. So that was done. It doesn't say, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say anything about shields, doesn't say anything about clamps, doesn't say anything about about being done together. That is the way the halacha is brought down in Shulchan Aruch, okay? In the Torah and through the Shulchan Aruch as well. We could take a look. We could see that inside as we turn to the Shulchan Aruch. So in the Shulchan Aruch itself, the Shulchan Aruch Tzif Beis is, as we said before, you could cut with everything, even with this glass and anything that cuts, except for this reed, because that could lead to some kind of damage. Find that Sif Beis, there's not very much to talk about with regards to that. Sif Gimel is actually a set of halachos that exist today before you get up to the beginning of Sif Gimel. Sif Gimel begins with the words Ketzan Malin. How do you do the Mila? You cut off the Orla. So nowadays there is an additional tool that is used, meaning when the Mo'el would show up back in the time of the Shulchan Aruch. So what would be in his bag? So far we only know of one thing that would be in his bag. His bag would have a knife, and his knife would be, or perhaps scissors, but probably a knife that would be used to cut off the foreskin, and everything else was done by hand. In addition, today now, there is another tool several tools that the Mo'el comes with. In fact, I think for the last, when I prepared this year last time, I didn't look it up today. If you I Googled something about bris instruments, And the classic Mo'el kit that he shows up with is going to have a knife, obviously. But the other thing that he has is there's a process that's now done before the bris, which is referred to as hafrada. Hafrada literally means to separate. What are you doing in order? What does that mean? What are you separating? So they would take a prod. And nowadays, the Mo'el takes a prod and goes under the membrane in order to separate the membrane before the Mila takes place, right? Meaning in the Shulchan Aruch, naturally, the membrane is somewhat separated. That's why you're able to peel it back so easily off of the foreskin. But it's not completely separate. So there's some kind of blunt-edged tool that they use in order to separate that, in order to do this process called hafrada, this process called separation. And that tool has the very beautiful name, the mafrid. right, which is the separator. Now, there's, of course, there's got to be some controversy about doing this. There are, and we should just bear in mind as we go through, this perhaps is a very controversial sif, just because mitzvah of milah is traditionally a very controversial mitzvah, right? It is something that is often would be picked on by, use the term progressive, people that are trying to sort of change the tradition somewhat. Milah is always going to be a prime target and something that, and then, and therefore on the flip side, will be staunchly defended by traditionalists. So, and this sif is where we talk about the action of milah, is where a lot of these things come into play. I mean, what exactly is the real way to do milah? Right. So it's a little unclear. All we know is the way it's been done, and we know what needs to happen. But does it have to be, but in order to achieve what needs to happen, does what the way it always has been done need to be the way it's continuously done? Or perhaps is there room for improvement? So this already is a, quote, improvement. Right? This is going to make the Priya much faster, much easier, but it also is a change in the Mesorah, it's a change in the tradition, it's a change in the way that things were done. So that's a second here. So this was a machlokas, you know, about 100 or so. It seems like the 1800s or so. This is a machlokas, and in fact, he quotes here in the Nishmas Avram. He actually quotes from Rav Yashiv that he heard in the name of Rav Yashiv that Rav Yashiv recommended not using this mafrid because it causes injury and suffering to the baby, and then you wouldn't. And if the baby is then suffering from it, you shouldn't go ahead and do the bris. So he says, however, in Nishmas Avraham, he quotes from Rishon Mazalman that doesn't necessarily cause damage to the child. And he says that expert Moalim know what they're doing. This probably, if I had to guess, might be the part of meal that requires the most touch and the most expertise, figuring out how to do this without causing additional pain to the baby. There's an additional issue of, can this be done on Shabbos, right? What's the problem? So are those who said, yeah, maybe you could do it during the week, but you can't do it on Shabbos. What would be the problem with doing it on Shabbos? Because if you're prodding around down there, it's going to cause some bleeding. And if you're causing bleeding, so then that's a violation of the malacha of Shabbos, the malacha of Shochet, you're causing blood to come out on Shabbos. So the response to that, so others, Rav Shlomo Zalman said, no, I think that's okay to do it on Shabbos as well, because the expert Moalim have told me that they could do it without blood. That's certainly not a vada, it's certainly not a certainty that blood will come out. And, you know, I don't make it to that many brises, and most of the brises that I've ever been to are all done by the same Moalim. But it seems like the tradition, at least in our circles, is certainly to use these... this hafrada tool, to do this separation tool. There's a further distinction amongst Moalim as to when to do the hafrada. So sometimes you go to a bris and you hear the baby comes out and the Moal starts getting to work and the baby starts crying and the Moal is going on for a minute, 2 minutes or so, where the baby is crying, and all of a sudden the Moal yells out, Bris Kaidesh, and he goes ahead and does the Mila. And sometimes the baby comes out, they take they unwrap the diaper, you hear the baby start crying, and within 5 seconds the Moal is saying, Bris Kaidesh, Baruch Atah Hashem, and he right away does the Mila. So what's going on there? What's the difference? So some Moalim do the Hafrada beforehand, right? The Moal often leaves right after Shmona Esrei and disappears for 20 minutes, right? What's he doing during that time? So he's doing this procedure. So at my oldest son, Yehoshua, so his bris was done by the Katzenstein family. So they're famous for being, I call them, the fastest knife in the East. And that's the main reason, because they do the hafrada beforehand, where nobody hears it except for the mother, who's, you know, going through our own trauma, but it's done in the side room. The baby comes out. The baby, it's all bandaged, all ready to go, and he puts on this guard that we'll get to shortly, and the Mila is done very, very quickly. There's others that it's not done that way. The baby comes out, and the mole then gets to work, and people start getting a little uncomfortable, and it takes a minute or two for him to do this hafradah process, and then he's ready to go, and then he does and makes the bracha. So that is that's the hafradah issue. I don't know if there are still molim today that don't do it at all. It sounds like you would need to do it at all in order to get to the next stage of the bris process, which is also not mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, right? What is that? So that's called in the Psakim Utshuvos, he refers to it as tfisa. What is tfisa? So tfisa literally means to grab. So they're grabbing the foreskin into one place. So this was not done. The impression you get from the way the Shulchan Aruch describes is that the foreskin was sitting there, and you would cut around and cut it. Nowadays, you grab the tefisa. I shouldn't take a fist. You take two fingers, right, and you grab the foreskin, and whatever needs to be cut is then pulled on top, so it's off the surface of the top of the penis. And then, therefore, what goes along with it? What goes along with it is the membrane, right? The membrane that needs to be pulled back goes along with the foreskin, and therefore it's all brought on top of the tip of the penis, and therefore it's able to be cut off in one fell swoop. Without having any of these challenges. So that is the section called tefisa, also something that is not common. And for that, they would use, you pull it forward and you put it in some kind of guard, not a clamp. We'll get to the clamp shortly. Some kind of guard. And that's the way that the bris is done. Putting it in the guard is actually called the hachnasas hamagin, placing the mugging, placing it on top of it. And now the bris is ready to go, and now you actually get to what it says in Shulchan Aruch, where it says, "Chutchin es ha'orla," you cut the orla, "kola or ha'chofa ha'atara," all the skin that covers the atara needs to be cut, "at shetiskala ha'atara," until the atara is completely uncovered. "V'achar kach porin es ha'krom," and then you would pull back the membrane, harach, the soft membrane, shelmata me'or, that's under that skin, b'tziporin, with your fingernails, "Machziru lekanu lekan," and you pull it back to the other sides, "at shiyira basar atar," until you see the flesh itself. "V'achar kach motzitzin hamila," and then they would, okay, period. So that's and then it's done, right? So the bris mila has been cut, the skin is gone, and the baby is crying, and but now the bris has been completed. Any questions, comments, or observations up to this point? So I don't see anybody waving or shouting or anything. So the question that I had is, even that is a very significant change, to go from the way cutting as it's described in Shulchan Aruch to this pulling up and sort of grabbing, holding together and having a guard and cutting. That's a very significant change, and that seems to be totally accepted as far as I could tell. I don't recall ever seeing a mila done in any other way. Again, with the disclaimer that I haven't seen that many, hundreds of milas. I've seen a bunch, but not that many. So I don't know if this is controversial. I actually emailed a chaver of mine who is a moel today, and just asked him, I looked around a little bit, using Google, was there any controversy regarding these changes that took place? So he wrote back to me, "I'm a little busy right now. I'll have to talk to you later. I'm free at 9:00. So couldn't get a...
I had a comment that the couple of times I've actually seen it up close, I've seen a hemostat, which worked under the foreskin, and it just like a cut, and it just like the whole thing just like comes off.
What's a hemostat? What does that mean?
A hemostat is like something like pinches, like if you're pinching a vessel.
Yeah.
It's like, it looks like a scissors, but the pieces are, the ends are, it's like, the ends are flat.
Okay.
So it really can grab onto things.
Okay.
It's got the ridges, so it can really grab onto tissue. So that's what I've seen.
So that's the guard. I mean, that's a guard?
It's a clamp.
It's a clamp.
Right. So
it's not the same thing as the clamp that I've seen in some, where it's like a sort of like a U-shaped thing, or not a U, but a kind of like a elephant ears kind of thing, and the foreskin gets in the middle, and you just slice over. And it's too bad I can't be there to draw a picture.
All right.
As a clamp. Sam's got it right. So they clamp the foreskin, they clamp the foreskin and they raise it up and then they cut,
Okay, I'm doing a quick,
Do a Google and see what I'm talking about.
Okay, you mean, I have one of those right here. One second. You mean one of these guys?
I can't see. You have to hold it up to your face. It kind of looks like that. I have to see it more closely, but yeah.
It locks, right?
Yes.
It locks. Yes.
Yes. Why do I have one next to my desk, you might wonder?
It's good for picking things up. I don't know.
It's a very important mezuzah tool. Pull out of a tube that way. It's a.
But the ones I've seen are not curved. At Bris, they're not curved. They're straight. That's the principle.
Okay, right. Okay, so that's the same principle. It's just getting it out there. The clamps are a little more controversial. Much more controversial. Was the clamps actually cause the blood to go away? And that's what Poskim are very nervous about. Part of the mila requires dam. And therefore we shouldn't be going ahead and using these clamps.
He must that actually means stop the blood. Yeah. Because
the
blood is going in
the
wrong
direction. All right. Well, now I know the right word. The truth is, I was at somebody's house doing their mezuzahs, and I took this thing out. The person's like, it was a doctor. Why are you holding a hemostat? I said, I'm holding a what? I forgot what the term was. Okay, that must have been what that person said to me. Right. No, I figured that they were not invented for mezuzah use. I figured they were. Okay, so that is... how this change took place and what order if it was controversial at all. So I'll save that for next week. I don't know. I don't have much more to say on it. Although I am interested in finding out. Anytime that there is some kind of change, we hear so much about the fight, the pushback against changes and how things are, as we'll see in the next line here. I'm interested to find out how it actually might have been a successful transition that took place. Okay. So the very next thing that the Shulchan Aruch then mentions is ba'achar kach motzitzin hamila. They would then suck from the mila ad sheyatza adam me'amakom ha'rachokin k'dei shelo yavu lidei sakana, until the blood comes out from the further points. And what the measurement they're looking for is, I'm not sure, but so that they won't lead to a sakana, they won't lead to any type of danger. V'chol mo'al she'enu motzitz ma'vir noso, and any mo'al who doesn't do this, so you shall remove him. Period. Okay, so that's line number two. So this we've probably heard this controversy a little bit more prominently, the issue of metzitza bepeh. So the Gemara assumed that this was a required part of the bris. Why is this a required part? To the point that if somebody didn't do it, so they were a bad mole and we're going to get rid of them. So why is that a So the simplest, if you read the Gemara straight up, the impression that you get is that this was a medical procedure. This was assumed, and as Rav Shechter likes to say, they were going by the best medical evidence that they had at their time, and they assumed that that was going to be healthy for the child, and therefore if you don't do it, that means you're not doing everything in the interest of the health of the baby, and therefore you would need to be removed. So that's what it sounds like from the Gemara, although maybe not, maybe yes, maybe no. However, the Ran, as far as I could tell, is the first major authority to question that and say, well, maybe not. Maybe there's a little bit more to it than just being a medical intervention. Maybe that's actually part of the mitzvah. Now, he didn't say this as, you know, he was just just suggesting in Lumdus, but that question then carries through Arayom Hazeh, really until today, as to what is the status of Mitzitza. And there's two major challenges to the continuation of the Mitzitza practice, one of them being halachic, and one of them being scientific. Right, the halachic issue with regards, well, the scientific issue is obvious, that if a mole is now going to take his lip and suck the blood out of an open wound of a baby, so that could lead to danger to both the mole as well as to the baby. Now, there's not so much danger to the mohel because, you know, whatever, the mohel's a grown man, well, there's not so much that could go wrong. But to the baby, if the mohel is carrying any type of infection, so that could actually lead to a significant infection to an eight-day-old baby. And there are babies that have gotten very sick and perhaps even died from it. Now, that is a controversial statement, and those that are in the pro-Mitzitza camp will deny it. But that's the reality. And how many, etc. So this has led to several controversies over the years with regards to the issue of Mitzitza, Bepeh, and Brisson. So that's the scientific issue. The Shabbos issue then takes it one step. The halacha issue then takes it one step further, and that is, well, what could be wrong? Assuming you push the science away and say, all right, fine. So maybe it doesn't help the baby. All right, well, it might damage the baby. All right, let's push that to the side for a second. But there's also a major halachic issue with that, and that is doing mitzitza on Shabbos is an isser d'oraisa, right? It is a biblical prohibition to do mitzitza on Shabbos. You are sucking liquid out of a solid. That's like milking a cow. Milking a cow is a violation of dush on Shabbos. So now you're violating an isser d'oraisa for what? So if you say, well, that's the only way that's for the health of the baby, so okay, fine, we do things for the health of the baby. If you say that that's a halachic requirement, then fine, we'll do things for a halachic requirement. But if you say, well, that's the way we always did it because we once assumed that it was for the health of the baby, but now we realize it's not, but we just want to continue the tradition, so that is not a permissible reason to violate the Shabbos. So this is one of these interesting cases where the pro science people then end up being the ones who are machmir and hilchos on hilchos Shabbos. I mean, if you're going to be pro science, then you're going to argue you can't go ahead and do this on Shabbos. If you're going to be on the chachamim knew best, and therefore we're going to keep on doing this, so then you're going to end up being, in Hilchos Shabbos, you're going to end up being on the Mekel side, you're going to end up being on the lenient side when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos. So this is a major, major machlokas that is out there, continues Arayom Hazeh. There's really three different approaches that are out there. Some of them don't do anything. Some will... I think only during the Shabbos. I'm not sure what they do, if they do it on Shabbos. But what has become the middle of the road position is to use some kind of pipette, to use some kind of tube, where the mole will suck the blood out of the baby, but there'll be a tube in the middle with like cotton in the middle that will absorb the blood in it. So therefore, the mole is not coming in personal contact with the baby. And then there is the Hasidic world, the Hasidic world will. Do mitzitza bepeh 100% fully, no question about it. How far spread is that? I don't know. Rabbi Eisenman told me that in the Philadelphia yeshiva, most of the brises done there are all being done with mitzitza bepeh full out. So not so far away. In the more modern Orthodox world, there are shuls that have There are shuls that have banned mitzitza v'peh, and there are those that sort of are in the middle, sort of against it, against it, or require the use of a pipette someplace in the middle. So there is a story here in Nefesh HaRav, which is Rav Shechter is writing about Rav Soloveitchik. So he says, Das Rabbeinu Haisa, this is on page, at least in my edition, page 243. So he says, Das Rabbeinu Haisa, that the Rav felt, the Bizman Hazeh, Ein Tzarech Mitzitza Klal. You don't require Mitzitza at all, as the Tiferes Yisrael, in his commentary Mishnah, has pointed out. The Tiferes Yisrael is living in the 1800s already, pointing out that it's outside of the medical requirements of the time. Now, he actually has a footnote here, a star, where he says that one of the Chashiv Talmidim of the Rav told him that this wasn't correct. Rather, he just says, you don't have to do Mitzitza, Mitzitza B'peh. And not only that, but the Rav Chaim, already in Brisk, already, there's also 1800s, told his Moalim that they shouldn't do Mitzitza B'peh. So it seems like it's a Soloveitchik family tradition to be against the practice of Mitzitza B'peh. And then he says, V'sipir lanu, and then he told us, the Rav, right, he told us, Heachshapamachas, one time, Ratza Amol lasos Mitzitza B'peh, he was at a bris, and the Amol wanted to do Mitzitza B'peh, and Vike Sharbeinu Mimenu Shelo Yaseh, and the Rav asked him not to do it. The Cheshehivtzer Amol B'davar, now the Moel was tough about it, Amr Le Rabbeinu, so the Rav said to him, She'ilu Haya Aviv Rav Moshe Soloveitchik Nochach, that had my father had been alive, my father was here, lo haya menicho kval lasos mitzitza b'peh v'shum open. He would not allow you to do it. I mean, Rav Soloveitchik said, you know, if my father was here, he would tell you absolutely, positively not. Aval ani ma'od savlani, but the Rav Soloveitchik said, he says, me, I'm very patient, I'm an easygoing guy, v'yosha tamafshir kol kach anichacha, and you're so adamant about it, so I'll let you go ahead and do this. And then in the brackets he adds in, he says, of Sipur Lanu Rav Shraga Feivel Scheinfeld, Sheuvdezu Haisa Eitzal Bris Mila Shel Beno, HaRav Yoel. Shraga Feivel Scheinfeld, I assume is Rabbi Schoenfeld, I assume that's Fabian Schoenfeld, for his son Rav Yoel Schoenfeld, who is the rabbi in the youngest Yisrael of Kew Garden Hills. My father is listening, he'll know who they are, right? That's about a mile away from my parents' house. So he says it happened at his bris. Okay, maybe yes, maybe no. But so there is a, this is a very conflicted issue. The RCA has a statement about Mitzitza B'peh. At one point it became a fiery thing. And RCA said that we don't recommend the use of Mitzitza B'peh, but nor do we advocate for its ban, right? We sort of like the position of Rav Soloveitchik, we're not going to fight against it. And I think that's a general political opinion that we don't want the government to start, right? What was going on was that New York State wanted to start imposing restrictions on Mitzitza B'peh, or to some kind of health test that the Moel had to take, or some type of waiver that the parents would have to sign. And the Agudas Yisrael world was obviously adamantly against any type of changes like that. And I think the RCA, who perhaps were not so, didn't necessarily say it had to stay into place, but I think everybody is very nervous about any time the government starts making claims about religious things for any religion, even if it doesn't affect you directly. So the general approach of these organizations is to fight hard against it. So therefore they would fight hard against it. However, there are shuls that ban it. There are shuls that say absolutely not an R shul would we allow it. I personally, in Beth HaMedrash, I don't know if we've ever had to structure a policy, but I would add, Rav Soloveitchik's position, if I would ask him not to do it. But if somebody was absolutely insistent, so it's hard to argue when many have many, when there's much of Klal Yisrael is in favor of these types of things. Okay. So at the end of the just to finish off this simon, the sif. So my viewers, so after shematzatz nasan aleha aspalanis or retia. So after this is done, you would place a bandage or a plaster on it, or avak or powder, samim with medicine ha otsrim hadam. That is meant to stop the blood from bleeding. And continues the Rama, v'yeh nizar im yesh la asfonis shepa Safa that you should make sure that the edge of the bandage is somehow wrapped away from the body, so and not towards the body, so that it doesn't stick too much to the wound or to the skin, and that itself could lead to a sakana. So it is, you know, those bris diapers the first couple of days look pretty bad, as these bandages have to be changed, but you can keep in mind that putting it on and changing them, etc., that's a fulfillment of a mitzvah, and maybe you feel a little bit better about it when doing that. And then we said siftah also mavelo paraki lomal, that if you do the mila you don't do priya ki lomal, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah. So with our changes, the rest of the sif doesn't really, we don't quite perceive the rest of the sif. The rest of talks about when there's strands that are left over, when part of it is done well, part of it is not done well, part of it is covered, part of it is uncovered. That continues to the end of the sif. Perhaps we'll get back to that mirtzah shav next week when we pick up from here again. That's all I got for tonight. All right, so I'll stop here. Any questions, comments, observations on this? Any?